This room, if you guys want to sit over here, guys can sit here. One of the Surim of Avela, which applies to Tishbav as well, which, you know, hopefully as the afternoon goes on, we'll speak about Bobi Arichos, is the prohibition against learning Torah. Nevertheless, based on what the Gemara tells us, that those areas of Torah which are not that enjoyable, which are a sad tone to them, the one is permitted to learn, we assume the halacha both on Tishbav as well as being the Avelos. So following this, the Pesach of the Shulchan Aruch, that one is permitted to learn certain areas of Torah on Tishbav. So we're going to try to involve ourselves primarily in the halachas of Avelos. Nevertheless, the post can tell us, and we'll also talk about this, but not everyone even agrees to this, we'll talk about this hopefully later on also, that we generally assume that even though one is permitted to learn certain areas, such as Hilchos Avelos on Tisha B'Av and during Shiva, nevertheless, one should try to avoid going too much in depth. As you can say, Gevaldik Shtikl Torah, even Hilchos Avelos, that can give a person tremendous simcha. So we try to avoid doing that. We want to try to learn the Dinim Kipshuta, we want to try to basically focus on more of an overview in terms of the Hilchos Avelos. There's a Shulchan writes that sometimes Nebuch, a person is learning, and sometimes something is a Chadish in the middle. So what can you do? Anus Rechmanu Patre, but at least the focus at least should be to try to learn things somewhat on a superficial level, really to try to get a little bit of an overview in terms of Hilchos Avelos. So we're going to start with something which is not really Hilchos Avelos per se, but it's really the introduction to Avelos, and those are the Dinim of Aninus, that we know that the Mishnah tells us in Maseches Brachos, that when a person is Misha Nesa Muta Lefanav, that when a person experiences the loss of a close relative, so they have a whole status of halacha called an onein. Now the truth is that term onein that we're going to use just for simplicity is really an incorrect halachic term. Rav already pointed out that the term onein really in halacha refers to the prohibition against eating kachim if somebody's relative just died, and the prohibition against eating ma'aseh sheni, halachas that appear in other places in the Chumash. When we speak about hilchos aninus bezman hazeh, we're not talking about that. We're talking about not doing mitzvot in the state of being an onein. We're talking about not having basa, not having yayin in the state of being an onein. But the reason why we use the term onein is because it's shorter than the term misha meisa mutal lefanav. But the real halachic term is in fact the hilchos misha meisa mutal lefanav. We're going to call it hilchos onein, hilchos aninus. So what is the halacha of misha meisa mutal lefanav? So the Mishnah, the Gemara, and the third pack of brachos tells us that the basic thrust of misha meisa mutal lefanav means from the time that the immediate relative passes away until the kvura. So your primary focus is supposed to be on the nyanim of the kvura. Therefore, anything that's going to interfere with the tzarchei kvura, anything that's not going to be in the spirit of taking care of the kvura, is not permitted to be done at that time. Again, the primary yisurim are the isur of doing mitzvos and the isur of basa v'yayin. What exactly does the term mean, misha meisel muta lefanav? So the Gemara uses the phrase that kol shemutal lav v'kovra. The Gemara says that a person whose relative dies, who the relative, the karav who's alive, has a responsibility to bury the mace, so they are considered to be the misha meisa mutal lefanav, misha mutal lav v'kovra. So this term of misha mutal lav v'kovra led to a major machlekes in the Rishonim, which is still a burning issue, still a hot issue, ad hayom hazeh, as to how precisely we define what constitutes an onein. So ma'aseh shehaya kachaya, it happened to Rabbeinu Tam, quoted, Tosis quoted in Brachos, and the Rosh quoted in Brachos, and Ma'aseh Shehaya, that the sister of Rabbeinu Tam passed away. And Rabbeinu Tam lived in another town, so Rabbeinu Tam's sister happened to have been married. It's not clear whether this is the sister who actually was the mother of the Ri. One of Rabbeinu Tam's sisters had an illustrious son who was the Ri. The Ri was the nephew of Rabbeinu Tam. It's quite possible that it was the same one. So Rabbeinu Tam's sister passed away, and the news came to Rabbeinu Tam that his sister had died, and the Kavura had not yet taken place. And Rabbeinu Tam said that he did not have the halachic status of an onein. Why did Rabbeinu Tam claim that he did not have the halachic status of an onein? So Rabbeinu Tam says it's not mutar alayla kovro, that it's not up to me, I'm not the one responsible for burying her. Why exactly did Rabbeinu Tam feel that he was not the one responsible to bury her? So here there are two different versions in the story of what happened to Rabbeinu Tam. So one version of the story is that Rabbeinu Tam said she's married, so her husband is metapol in a kfur, her husband is required to bury his wife. So Rabbeinu Tam said that I'm a brother, so I'm not really involved. I'm not going to be making the preparations for the kvura. So since the halach of onen stems from being the one who's required to do the kvura, so Rabbeinu Tam said I'm not the one. So I don't have the status of an onen in halacha. The other version of what Rabbeinu Tam said was the reason why I'm not required to be an onen, I'm not bound by the halachas of onen right now, is because it's in another town. So the relatives in the other town are going to take care of it. So according to the second version of Rabbeinu Tam, the emphasis wasn't so much on a married woman versus a single woman versus other relatives. Rather, the emphasis was, are you in town? Are you really actively being involved in the tzarech kfura now? The Rosh disagrees with Rabbeinu Tam. The Rosh says that it's not true, that if you're halachically a relative, whether you are in town, you're not in town, you're married, you're single, it doesn't matter. If you're halachically an immediate relative, any relative who is required to sit shiva for, you're considered to be an onen. So this question now becomes very, very relevant. Mamash halacha l'maisa, you have a situation where sometimes a person passes away in another town, in another country, and you have a relative, for argument's sake, you have a relative in New York, and the mace is in Eretz Yisrael, and they're not going to go to the kvura, whatever the case is, older people, they can't fly, whatever, they're not going to go to the kvura. They're not going to have any shaykhas whatsoever to the tzarchei kvura. So the question is, are they really onen or not? So if you take Rabbeinu Tam's very limited definition of onen, onen means someone who's mamish there, means I'm present, I'm required to be involved in the kvura. So only such a person is an onen. So according to Rabbeinu Tam, many of these modern-day shaylas, the person is not technically an onen. Because if you go with the Rosh's understanding of onen, that onen means chayav l'sabel alav. Anyone who I'm mechiv to misabel for, if that's called mutar alav kovro, so then there would be a halach of aninos even under these types of scenarios. So this is still an ongoing machlekes, adayam azeth, machlekes the Shulchan Aruch and the Shach and the later poskim, how to be machriya the shayla. There are different opinions amongst the rabbanim bizman azeh, how do you pask in these kinds of shaylas where the relatives are mamish no shaykhs whatsoever to what's going on because they're far away and the other relatives taking care of it, is that still considered to be an onen or not? This idea that there is some kind of a link between the halachas of onen, the prohibitions of doing mitzvahs, and the prohibition of the yayin, that's linked somehow to the fact that I'm being metapel in the kvura, to some sense. So that's what the Yerushalmi tells us, that what if the mace was already handed over lekatofer, lekatofer literally bakateif, the pallbearers, those are going to carry the mace on the shoulders. So the Yerushalmi says that if the mace was already handed over, that means the krovim already finished whatever they're doing, and now the mace has already been given over to the katofim, so then technically speaking, the aninus doesn't apply anymore. The aninus falls by the wayside once it's the saru of the katofim. That's what it says in the Yerushalmi, that's what the Shulchan Aruch paskens. So there is a big question in the later Acharonim, how does this play out in terms of Achever Kedisha with Manadeh? Should we equate the modern-day Chavar Kedisha with the Katofim of the Yerushalmi? So if you hold that the two are equated, so come out a tremendous Chiddush b'zman hazeh, usually what happens in normal protocol today, a person passes away, usually the first call is to the Rav, or Chavar Kedisha gets involved fairly quickly. So the Chavar Kedisha will come, and they'll take the body away, and they're going to get the Arad, and they're going to get the Techrichim, and they're going to do the Tara, all the things that in the olden days was really the domain of the individual relative. So if you hold that the handing over to the Chavar Kedisha in the year 2005 is the same as the Yerushalmi's Katofim, so we have just about done away with the halachas of Aninus Guzman of that. And basically the whole category of halacha called Onein basically doesn't apply because we have a Masaru, the Chavar Kedisha, immediately. So many poskim disagree with that analysis. Many poskim argue that the two aren't quite the same. The Mesarula Katofim of the Yerushalmi, which uproots the Aninos, and today's Chavar Kedisha is not really the same for a variety of reasons. And that Yehuda writes that he thinks that the Yerushalmi was only talking about in a situation where the relatives aren't even going to go to the cemetery. The mamish, they wash their hands of the story. They are finished. They did whatever they did, and it's over. Now they're not being offered in the Kvura. So that's the only time that the Yerushalmi made it, said it's Chiddush, that Mesarula Katofim, so the whole Aninus falls by the wayside. whereas Bisman Azeh, usually the relatives do go to the cemetery, so Adinus will still apply Bisman Azeh, notwithstanding the role of the Chevra Kedisha. Others argue that maybe at modern day Chevra Kedisha, they don't do everything, they take care of most of the things, but still the relatives are still involved in preparing a spedim, and they're very often involved in telling people about the Levaya, which is going to add the Chavon HaMeis. So even though they may not be involved like as the way Chazal described, the actual Chavon HaMeis in the sense of digging a grave and making an arun and sowing techrichim, so that aspect of Chavon HaMeis may be done by the professionals, but there are other types of Chavon HaMeis that are still done by the relatives. So maybe those types of Chavon HaMeis is also enough to invoke the halacha of aninus. So a variety of reasons, it's generally assumed as Bisman Azeh, that the category of aninus still does apply today, notwithstanding the fact that the mace was handed over to the Chevra Kedisha. But every once in a while you get a strange type of a scenario where it's really not shaykh to speak about aninus in the classic sense of the word, because as we said already, that aninus is linked to the notion of the Chi of Kavura. According to Rabbi Natan, it's linked very, very directly only to someone who's actually literally being involved in the Chi of Kavura right now. Or even according to the Rosh, it extends a little bit to people who maybe should be involved in the Chi of Kavura. But there is clearly some kind of a link between the halachas of Aninus and the fact that the Kavura is supposed to be done, you know, as soon as possible to enhance the Kavan Ameis. So what would the halacha be if you have somebody passes away and it's not shaykh to do a Kavura? It's impossible to do a Kavura right now. Why is it impossible to do the Kavura? No, you don't have a body. The body's not here. Why don't you have a body? The body is lost. The body is under rubble. They're trying to find the body. They know the person died, but they can't find the body right now. There is no kavura to take place right now. Or let's say you have a situation, as we alluded to this morning in the kinos, the maisa from Maharami Rutenberg. Maharami Rutenberg was nifter in jail, and he wasn't released by the non-Jewish authorities for 14 years. So you're going to tell me that for 14 years his relatives were owning him? It's ridiculous. The Rishonim quote that story. The Rishonim say, but that doesn't make any sense. And the whole idea of the halachas of aninus is to enhance, to encourage that their relatives should be involved only in the kavur. They shouldn't be eating meat and drinking wine, or they shouldn't be davening shacharis. They shouldn't be sitting and learning. They should be osing in the tzarchei kavura. What do you want from the poor relatives of the Maharam? How are they going to be osing in the kavur? There's no body. They don't have rishus to bury the maze. So b'chi agavna, these types of unique situations where there's no ability whatsoever to take care of the maiz, so nebuch, the halachas and aninus are put on hold. It doesn't necessarily mean that avelus begin. That's way down the line today. We'll find out when exactly avelus begins. But in terms of aninus, in terms of that unique period of halacha, the isra mitzvahs and the isra bosa v'yayin, so that is really put on hold. It doesn't apply under these types of circumstances. And you have modern day shailas that come up about do we have any modern applications of this principle? Hopefully we should never have such these horrifying examples. But the post came out a discussion about the following shaila. They're already in the Achronim, ready in the Pesach Tshuva, quotes the shaila. What if you have a situation where a person is nifter and the body is not being released by the non-Jewish authorities, not chalila out of spite and not out of rishus? It's not being released for a short amount of time because sometimes there's a criminal investigation that's taking place. Sometimes there are certain tests that have to be done on the body. We'll talk about them hopefully, ma'am, as we go on. What's allowed to be done? Not allowed to be done. Sometimes a person dies in a tragic way that's so posher that they have to wait for a little while before they're able to release the body to the relatives. But it's not Khalil that they're holding the body up for 2 years, for 14 years, they're holding up for 2 days. And they're telling the relatives, as soon as we finish whatever we have to take care of, so we're going to give it to you, we're going to release the body. So would you say during that short amount of time that the relatives are not owning him? So that's a big machlokes. That was a shayla the poskim. So many poskim, I think, are noted to say that they are still considered to be owning him. And the rationale being that in the case of the Maharam, so the relatives never knew they were ever going to get the body back. It could be that Taka 14 years later they got it back. But it could be Taka never, they would never get the body back. So it could be there's never going to be a kvura. Whereas over here we thought it's going to be a kvura. We know for a fact there's going to be a kvura. It's going to be 48 hours, there's going to be a kvura. So once in a while, Taka, I was once unfortunately involved in such a shiloh, there was someone in my shul who was killed in a car accident. And apparently whatever the laws were, that they weren't able to release the body for a certain amount of time because they had insurance things, whatever it was, had to be a certain amount of time had to pass to do whatever had to be done. So the Shaila was, other people took it to be Odinim, so this is Mamish the Shaila. I think that most of the folks can assume that since it's really such a short amount of time, and we know for a fact that the body is going to be released, so that halacha of the Ma'arav, that case of the bodies that are locked up in jail for years that have gone by, so those probably don't apply under these circumstances. There is a discussion that the Rishonim have about situation. Let's say a person is escorting the body to Kvura, but during the time that the person is escorting the body to Kvura, so they're not obviously involved in the Kvura per se. So in the olden days, you would have it sometimes in a boat. Sometimes they would take the body by boat to Eretz Yisrael. So it can go days, you can go for days before the body is actually going to reach Kvura. So what's that loch? Are the relatives considered to be Odinim or not? So there are more quotes. If there's a little bit of a compromise, and it depends how long it is. If it's a very short amount of time, less than a day, so then we assume that the aninus is still valid. It means basically they're still in the kvura mode. Vashenken, if it's for a long period of time, so they're on a boat with the body for 2 weeks, so then Mamish can't do anything, he ends the time, so that's not considered to be odinim. So the modern day poskim try to extrapolate from that rabbah to our scenarios in terms of the plane, the common shaila. Person escorts the mace from New York to Eretz Yisrael. It takes 10 hours. So what's that look like? So if you follow strictly what it says in the Ramah, that's less than a day. So if I fly no place in the whole world today where you can't fly in more than a day, so it's less than a day. So that's still considered to be an onus. That v'chap enough kamina, that the relative is still considered to be an onus. He can't do mitzvahs, other things. Can't have also v'yayin on the plane. There is a suggestion that Rav Shlomo Zalman has. I don't know if he meant it. Totally because it's not quoted as a ha'ara, as a possibility. The Shlomo Zalman said that maybe planes are different than boats, because in a boat, so the relative is mamish traveling together with the mace. So somehow there's like, I guess like psychologically in a sense, but there's like a feeling that he's still being Isaac in the Tzarchei HaKvura, so he's still a little bit of an oinei. Whereas the Zvan HaZeh, when you fly with the mace in a plane, the mace is put in the cargo section. There's absolutely nothing kihu there that you could possibly do during those 10 hours which is shaykh to any kavanah mace whatsoever. So maybe you could argue that your hands are mamish tied, so you're temporarily not considered to be an onus. That's a shayla that Shlomo Zalman raised. Again, there are different opinions as to how to extrapolate from this particular case of the Ramah. So the kofanim, the whole theme behind everything that we're basically saying is that the idea of aninus is definitely kavur oriented. So when you have situations where either you're not being involved in the kavur, like at least according to Rabbeinu Tam, or in situations where it's not shaykh to have a kavur, like the case of the Maharam, these kinds of scenarios where the kavur is for whatever reason not taking place, that you're not being involved in it, or unless you're looking at tafim, so those may be situations where the halachas of aninus are really put on hold. What about other normal circumstances?
Is it against the rush that, like this, the way we're...
You mean the question is this really the same as the rush? It's a little bit different than the rush, because over here it's not shaykh, they can't do anything. In case there had been a time, he could have gone to the other town, he didn't. So that's the question, is it really the same? When we speak about not being able... Yeah, but please take the enjoy watching it,
huh?
Okay. Oh, sorry, some guys are springing from. When we speak about the relationship between aninus and the actual kavura itself, so this clearly brings into question the following shaila. What's the status of a person who's an onin on Shabbos? So Shabbos is obviously a time when it's not shaykh to be Isaac, but it's not you're allowed to do on Shabbos. You're not allowed to do a kavura on Shabbos. So what's that halacha? So should we say that the whole aninus falls by the wayside? So this is a whole complicated sugya. This is, I guess, a little bit more of a gather of the lundas, the Bavli, the Rishalmi, a whole sugya at the beginning of the third parak of Barakat that tells us marachon upon is there aninus on Shabbos or not? And the basic idea being that it doesn't really make sense that the dinim of aninus should apply on Shabbos, because on Shabbos there's mamish nothing at all. You can say your hands are more tired than the maram's hands. It means your mamish can't do a thing. So what's presented to the finalists, all the dust settles in terms of the lundas, was basically presented in Shulchan Aruch as follows. That for the bulk of the day on Shabbos, there's really no aninus. But the onanim on Shabbos, so they're allowed to have basar, they're allowed to have yayin, they do mitzvahs, but all the dinim of aninus are put on hold. And the only thing is, at the very, very end of Shabbos, There's a special halach in Hilchos Shabbos that right before the end of Shabbos, you're allowed to do what's called machshech al tchum. Machshech al tchum means that you're not allowed to go chutz al tchum until Shabbos is over, but you're allowed to make certain achanas. You're allowed to walk towards atat till the very end of the tchum, l'tzorech mitzvah. So one of the tzorech mitzvah, the Gemara says, in the end of Shabbos, you're allowed to do is l'tzorech gevurah tamei. So let's say you have to get an aron and tachrichim, and the only way to get it is chutz al tchum. So you're allowed to walk right 5 minutes before Shkir. You're allowed to walk and stand by the Chum and wait till Shabbos is over in order to get the Arvei Tachrichim. So therefore the Shulchan Aruch quotes in the Rishonim, since there are certain Hachanas, very, very limited Hachanas that you could do on Shabbos, so at that time when you start to do those Hachanas, then the Dinim of Aninus kick in. Bizman Azeh, that whole concept doesn't really apply. Bizman Azeh, who's Mashach Latchum? The only Hachanas you're going to do is by making a telephone call, and you're not allowed to make a telephone call till Shabbos is really over. So Lemaisa Bizman Azeh, basically, the person is not really considered to be a no-name until Shabbos is actually until Shabbos is actually over. There is a question in terms of aninus on Yontif, so the same guidelines. And if you're not going to do anything on Yontif, so then there will be aninus on Yontif. The only possible exception is going to be Yontif Sheni. The Yontif Sheni, that locha strictly is, you are allowed to have a kavura on Yontif Sheni, even on Yedei Yisrael, to the Ferush of Gemara. Nevertheless, the Gemara tells us that there were a certain community that the people weren't so learned, and they paskin this halacha, they had a kavura on Yontif Sheni, and the Amoraim got angry at them. They got upset at them, and they said, it's not appropriate for you to have a kavura on Yontif Sheni, since your people are such amaratzim, so if they see people having a kavura, they're going to think you're allowed to do everything else on Yontif Sheni, so it's going to lead to a zilzul on Yontif Sheni. So therefore, the Chachamim recommended that in a place where there are a lot of amaratzim, so it's not right to follow this school of having a kavura on Yontif Sheni. So this issue resurfaced in the days of the Rishonim, that in a certain community in France had a kavura on Yontif Sheni, and Rabbi Natam got upset at them. He said that they're not such tamid chamid, we thought they were also amaratzim, and didn't think that it was appropriate. So the Shaila resurfaced again in America. So in the early years, in the 30s, 40s, So the Shaila was raised once again, what should be the protocol in America? Should we permit what the Gemara says is Mikra din is Mutter, that you're allowed to have a Kavur in Yontif Sheni, or should we be afraid it's going to lead to a terrible zilzul in Yontif? So this is the Machlekes HaPoskim, a very well-known Machlekes HaPoskim. It basically boiled down to the Machlekes between Rav Moshe on the one hand, against many of the Chassidish HaPoskim on the other hand. So Rav Moshe was of the opinion that in America it's too dangerous to have a Kavur in Yontif Sheni, it's not a good idea, it's going to lead to a zilzul. Therefore, that became the practice. And most of our communities, most of them do not have kavuras in Yontif Sheni, but nevertheless, in the Chassidish communities, so in fact they do. In fact, in the Breyer's community, they still have Arayim Azeh, they still have kavuras in Yontif Sheni. There was unfortunately a tragic story a couple of years ago in the Satmar community. There was a fire, Shavuos, who set the day Shavuos, and in fact they did the kavura on Yontif Sheni. They think, if I'm not mistaken, they drove the mace from Williamsburg to where the Satmar based at Kavaros is in Monroe, halfway up to the mountains. As it says in the Gemara, it says in the Shulchan Aruch, that you're allowed to bring the mace to the basic kavaros. If that's your basic kavaros, so you're allowed to do it. The chavad mace, you're allowed to do it. So they paskin like the Satmar Rebbe paskin, others are paskin against Rav Moshe. But even in America, you're allowed to have a kavura in Yontif Sheni. So yesh v'yesh, a different minhagim in America. So, but this plays out in terms of aninus also. So let's say you live in a community where nobody does kavuras in Yontif Sheni. Like most of our communities, it's almost unheard of to have a kavura in Yontif Sheni. So, well, what's the halacha? But theoretically, you could have a kavura. So, is there a nidus? Is there no nidus? Or Rav Moshe Paskin, that in effect, he says, if you follow my psak, that we just don't have kavuras anymore in Yontif Sheni, so a mela for us, Yontif Sheni is like Shabbos. And basically, for us, Yontif Sheni is like Yontif Rishon. If we're not going to do it, bottom line, push comes to shove, we're not going to have a kavura, so then this is not as man kavura. If it's not as man kavura, so then it's not as man of a nidus as well. Of course, those who live in those communities where they will do kavuras, so then, of course, it's like a regular weekday. If you're planning on doing a kavura, so then the dinim of aninus will apply. So we've been talking a lot about the dinim of aninus. We talked very, very quickly what they are. So we said, b'kitza nimrat, there's an isser of bosa v'yayin, and there's an isser of doing mitzvahs. So the isser of doing bosa v'yayin is a very common mistake. People think that the isser of bosa v'yayin has something to do with avelus. It's not true. But the reason why the Onanim don't have Bosa V'yayin is not because they're sad, so to speak, because of Avelos. The Yisra of Bosa V'yayin is because when a person sits down and has a whole big meal of Bosa V'yayin, so they're going to get involved in the food and they're going to end up not taking care of the Tzorchei HaMeis. So there's nothing to do with Avelos. Haraya, it's Het HaGomer for an Avel to eat meat and to drink wine. There's absolutely nothing wrong with an Avel during Shiva eating meat and drinking wine. In fact, as we'll see down the line, that there's one opinion of Rishon that says that the Sudas Havra should not have Yayin. You should not give them a little bit of wine to dull the senses a little bit, to not get drunk, but to help them lenachem as a oven a little bit. So the Isser of Vosav Yayin has nothing to do with Avelis. The Isser of Vosav Yayin is Aninus oriented. It's not Avelis oriented. That's why the reason why we refrain from Vosav Yayin during the 9 days also probably has nothing to do with Avelis. It's not Avelis per se. It's probably based on a different story. It's based on the Gemara in the third paragraph of the Vasra, where the Gemara tells us that at the time of the Beis HaMikdash was destroyed, so there were a group of individuals who decided they're going to stop eating Vosav and stop drinking Yayin the open void. Because how could it be that karbanos were brought from Basar and the Yayin was brought in the Mizbeach? How could we go ahead and have Basar V'Yayin? It's inappropriate after the Churban to indulge ourselves in Basar V'Yayin. So the Chachamim, when they heard about this, so they asked the people, you know, what you're doing is a good idea, then you shouldn't eat fruit either, because Bikurim used to be brought and now there's no Beis HaMikdash. The people said, you're talking right, we're not going to eat fruit anymore. Then the Chachamim said to them, you shouldn't eat bread anymore, because they used to bring karbanos, karban mincha, not going to eat bread. They said, Yitaka, right, we're not going to eat bread anymore. Then the Chum said to them, how can you drink water? Because they used to have a Nisa Chamayim, and now there's no Nisa Chamayim anymore. How can you drink water? They realized that they couldn't do that. They realized, they said, you know what? They asked the Chum, Yitaka, what should we do? So the Chum said to them, in theory, you're right, but the Gezeirish ain't Robertsi B'chom, we're not going to make life impossible for Klal Yisrael. We're not going to insist that people can't eat meat and can't drink wine and can't eat fruit and can't eat bread and can't drink water. We can't. We have to live. Even if there's a Churban, still a life has to go on. So Gezeirish ain't Robertsi B'chom, Ramadan. So the Rishonim write that those people were really right. I mean, in theory, they were really right, but you can't put that into practice. That's not shaykh. That's not feasible. So therefore, it's not feasible 365 days a year. 1 week, 9 days, then it is feasible. The person can go 9 days without Basa V'Yayin. So during the 9 days, what we're doing is, in effect, we're recreating what those people in the days of the Churban really felt should have been the proper protocol for all of Klal Yisrael for their entire lives. It wasn't shaykh, it wasn't feasible. So it's not really a velus per se. It's more of a zeicha l'mikdash. It's more of a zeicha to the lack of the Basa V'Yayin. It's more Zeicha L'Mikdash, it's more Tisha B'Av oriented, rather than Avelus oriented. That's why there really is no Isser for an Avel to eat that Bas of the Yayin. It's Mitzvah for its own name, because of the technical problem in terms of the Oseg and the Tzarchi HaMeid. And the Onein is not permitted to do Mitzvahs either. In fact, this is the Machlokes in Rishonim. There are some Rishonim who say that an Onein is allowed to do Mitzvahs, it's just that he's Potter. Because the Mishnah uses a Lashon, and Misha makes a Mutlah upon a Potter Mikrishmam in a Tzilim in a Tzilim. So it's a Shah of the Rishonim, is he Potter or is it really Asa? So we assume the Shavanah that he's really Asa, but he's not allowed to do Mitzvahs. That to do Mitzvahs like a Shtach to the Mace. He's supposed to be involved in the Tzarech HaMeis. And no, I can't take care of the Mace, I gotta go Daven Shachar. Gotta do that for me. That's not appropriate. That's the Bizoyan Amaze. You should be involved in the Covet Amaze right now. This cloud that we have that an Onein doesn't do mitzvah, so there are a lot of details that the Achronim talk about. There's a long Pirkei Tshuvah in the Simchas Ha'aninus where he talks about certain details of mitzvah, which Lom D'Shashas, again, really go beyond the scope of learning on Tisha B'Av. About, let's say, an owner ate a meal when he was an Onein, and now they had the Kavura, and it's still within 72 minutes. Should he bench? Should he not bench? Or let's say the owner went to the bathroom right before the Kavura, and now so he doesn't say Asher Yotza, but now when he gets to the Kavura, should he say Asher Yotza? A lot of technical mitzvah-oriented types of shilas, which are not really Avelus or Aninus per se, which are fascinating in themselves, but not really for now. Because we talk about one of the shilas, which is important for us, which is relevant to Lachlan Mike in terms of Tisha B'Av, is the Havdalah issue. That the whole shilah, when a person is an owner of Masai Shabbat, so he doesn't say Havdalah. So now the question is, so now after the Kvura, does he say Havdalah or not? That was a big machlekes of Rishonim. And some Rishonim say, Ho, v'nilcha yidochet, since the mitzvah of Havdalah is really on Masai Shabbat, and if you can't say Masai Shabbat, although there is tashlumin for Havdalah till Tuesday, but if you were putter of the Ikra Zman, then there's no tashlumin, and we don't paskin that way. We paskin that the Ikra Zman is in fact until Tuesday, so for whatever reason you didn't say it was the Shabbos, or the Yechayiv, your putter, doesn't matter, you should say it right away. That's the first one I'm meeting, and that's for tonight, hopefully after the time is over, but before anyone eats, but you should remember to hear Havdalah, following those Rishonim. But there was one opinion of Rishonim that said there's no Havdalah at all. That the whole Vinicha Yidacha, that there's no Havdalah whatsoever when Onen is an Onen on Matzah Shabbos, or for that matter, when Tisha B'Av corresponds to or coincides with Matzah Shabbos. Again, I reiterate for the people who came late, anyone who feels that they have to leave at any point, please don't even think twice. Okay. So we gave at least a little bit of an overview in terms of Hilchas Aninos. Now we're going to try to start Hilchas Avelos proper. Hilchas Avelos, so the halacha tells us that the one whose close relative passed away, a whole series of different halachas they have to observe, the halachas of Shivan, the halachas of Shloshim, the parents, the halachas of Beit Kodesh. Hopefully as we go on, we'll talk about the different particular Isurim that apply during each of those periods of Avelos. I want to talk just a little bit of an introduction. Who is supposed to be this Abel exactly? Where does it come from, this whole notion of Avelos? So the Gemara in Masechet Mo'ikata tells us that the halacha is very simple, that whoever is considered to be a relative for the purposes of Tumas Kohanim, the model in Parshas Emor, so whoever is a relative for Tumas Kohanim is considered to be a relative for the halachas of Avelos as well. In fact, this led some Rishonim to learn that the whole institution of Avelos is really deraisa, it's really an extension of Tumas Kohanim. The Rambam seems to learn that the mitzvah of being metame for a kohen to be metame for an immediate relative is kavod hameis. So to Avelos is considered to be like a kavod hameis type of a thing. So it's the same relative, so the person is metame for a father, for a mother, for a brother, for a sister, a child. So too a person would be metabel for those individuals as well. Other Rishonim say that the Gemara never meant to say that the Avelos is their eyes, that could be the whole Avelos is all the Midrabbanon, but the Chavin pattern, who's considered to be a relative, after those descriptions of relatives that appear in Parshas Emor. That's already a Lomdash Hashal and some of the Avelos, is it their eyes, is it their Rabbanon, but the bottom line is, the basic model that we're speaking about are the relatives that appear in Parshas Emor. And the Gemara just adds on that Midrabbanon, they added on a few other relatives. You can have the So you have a half-brothers and half-sisters who may not necessarily be covered by the Parsha and Parsha Zemar, but with the Rabbanon you have to be mitabel for them all. So basically the halacha is that a father, a mother, any kind of a brother, any kind of a sister, a son or a daughter or a spouse, so any of those, all those above individuals are required to be mitabel. That's the basic halacha in terms of mitabel. Then the Gemara has for us in Masechet Mo'ikaton, the Gemara has a big chiddush that there's another type of Avelos as well for other extended relatives, and those are like secondary relatives, let's say for a grandparent or for a grandchild or a nephew, things of that nature. So the Gemara says as follows, that any relative who you would be misabel for, if they die, if they themselves are sitting Shiva, so you also have to be misabel. So basically, what does that mean, Tachlis? It's a grandparent. So if a person's father would die, he would be Mithabel. So if the grandfather, the father's father dies, so he also has to be Mithabel. So that halacha, the Gemara says, that only applies to Sneha Krovim. It only applies if, let's say, the person is together with his father in the same place, and his father's sitting Shiva, so he has to be sit Shiva also. Shaloba Sneha Krovim, then it doesn't apply. Why is that? So the Ramban explained that this is not really a din of Avelos, this is really a din of Kavod HaKrovim. Person's parent is sitting Shiva, he should be dancing, he should be partying, it's not right. So he should get on the floor and take off his shoes and not wash, and whatever the parent doesn't do, so the child shouldn't do also. L'chvod ha-mit'avlish. The Ramban writes, he's learning in the Tzadik Kedushin last year, about different people who could be Meichel on their cover. The Ramban writes, ha-ovel she-mochel ha-kved ha-kved ha-mochel also. Let's say the father says to the son, listen, don't do the Nisayim, it's bad enough that I'm sitting Shiva, why should you sit Shiva? So I don't want you to sit Shiva. The Ramban says if the relative who's sitting Shiva says, I don't want you, don't do me any favors, so then that din, that secondary din of Avelos, doesn't apply, because the whole halacha was only instituted with Chavod HaMitzablim, so the Mitzablim themselves are Michael, so then they're Michael. So therefore, the Rishonim write, based on this Ramban, that our minig b'smanazah is that everybody's Michael on this tremendous covenant. Our minig is that relatives of Michael, that nobody wants their children or their nephews, whatever the extended relatives should be. Nobody wants these people to be sitting Shiva with them. So therefore, this whole halacha doesn't apply to Zman HaZeh. Nevertheless, the Ramah writes that there was a zeichet to this halacha. It was a minig that developed in the Ashkenazi communities as a little bit of a remembrance, a little bit of a zeichet to this halacha, that when a close relative is sitting shiva, so you also observe a quasi shiva. So the Ramah writes that the minig became that not to observe a full-fledged shiva, but at least until Shabbos. So if the person starts the shiva Tuesday, until Shabbos, so you don't wash, you don't change your clothes, certain things. You can learn, you can put on film, you know, the real levels of shiva don't all apply, but a few assorted tidbits of shiva were accepted in many of the Ashkenazi communities. So there are different opinions in the poskim about how much this really applies to Zana Zed. Does this only apply literally to say Aveilim? Does this apply? But if I'm not together with my parents and they're sitting shiva, how much of washing chlal? We'll get to the real certain people will talk about a real avel, that maybe certain kulas under certain limited circumstances to wash for avel and the zman azeh. The switching of shirts, maybe mutab is zman azeh also for real avel. So we'll have to talk about that as we go on. So many of those minhagim that there are more quotes are a little bit thrown into question, you know, about the parameters about how much they really play out this zman azeh. So the HPH are different minhagim about this. But the idea, you know, whether one follows the exact meaning of the Ramah is Manazeh, some other permutation of the meaning of the Ramah, the idea is definitely true. Namely, that was a relative of yours, a close relative, usually ends up to get a parent that's sitting shiva. So, child has to know it's not the time to be partying, it's not the time for him to be going throughout his normal, business as usual. Doesn't mean that he has to keep Havelos, doesn't mean he has to sit on the floor with his parents, but there's a Iman Rechim Etzara, Kibra Aveim, spent so much time to start talking about, so Kibra Aveim, Iman Rechim Etzara, requires that the child should act appropriately during that time. So again, whether the particular process of the Ramah's Minig are applicable all the time is somewhat questionable. As a general rule, the person is required to observe Havelos for his Krovim. So nevertheless, there are certain individuals who act in very inappropriate ways, who in a sense lose that chus, and they lose that technical requirement for their relative to observe shiva for them. So we'll just talk a little bit, some guidelines, and then before we actually put this, practice halacha l'maisa, this is something like when we spoke with Kibra Avim, we spoke about the halachas of an aviv who's a rasha, so one has to be very, 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 very careful for zman hazeh before one invokes some of these principles, l'maisa. So we'll just talk a little bit more theoretical. So the Gemara already in the Sechah Sanhedrin talks about an individual who's a parish medarches tzibur, the person who's has really left a life of Torah mitzvot, a person who maybe halachically would be labeled as a rasha. So technically speaking, there really wouldn't be any avelos for such an individual. So bizman hazeh, as we've already said in the past, in other contexts, it's very, very hard to really apply that label in halach of a rasha. First of all, 99.9% of the individuals who nebuch bizman hazeh not yet shown with their mitzvahs, it's not because they're rebellious, not because they're not mumrim, they're not doing anything that they think is wrong, they don't know, for sure, they're nebuch. Pinuk Shinishpah, the famous Rambam, says, and nebuch bizamrim, that the first generation of the karoyim, so those individuals who mamish, went off the derech and stayed in machlekes with the parish about that, so those individuals are really have not very good things to say about them. But the Rambam writes that the Bnei HaKaroyim, the next generation, what do you want from them? It's what their parents taught them, had a life of not observing Torah mitzvahs properly. Well, nebuch, what do you want? How much more so individuals who are not second generation, the third, fourth, fifth generation already of people who have left the life of Torah mitzvahs? For such individuals, it's very, very hard to invoke the principle of calling such a person a Russian in the classic sense of the halachic word. They often also, the post can point out that sometimes it can be a tremendous Chil Hashem in this area, that even by people who are not really Shema Torah mitzvah, some of our Avelos they take very seriously. Everybody says, why do people take Avelos seriously? The same reason they take Yuritzite seriously, they take Kaddish seriously. People are afraid of that. That's the bottom line. As the phrase goes, there's no atheist in a foxhole. So the same idea. The people who don't necessarily keep Shabbos and Kaddish and anything else, but certain, anything has to do with death, people shake, rightfully so. So sometimes you'd have a very, very terrible situation where you'd have different family members and the people who are not Shema Torah mitzvah, so they're keeping the Shiva Kedas V'Chadin, and all of a sudden the guy went off to Yeshiva, he became a Lambda, and he says, I don't keep Shiva because this person who dies in Russia, it's not going to go over very well. It would be a tremendous, tremendous Chil Hashem. Besides the fact that it's probably not true all the time. Because in the group of the cases, the people of Bizman are not really halachically Rishayim. So although in theory there's halacha parish b'dachet tibur, in terms of practically speaking, it doesn't apply all that much. There is a very, very tragic situation that the Rishonim discussed about somebody who commits a terrible, terrible aveira, the aveira me'abed asfal adas. The person, Nebuch, commits suicide. So what is halacha concerning such a person in terms of observing aveira? In fact, the Machlokes HaRishonim in the Rambam and the Ramban about whether the aveira is supposed to be observed for a person who is me'abed asfal adas, a person who commits suicide. In Shulchan Aruch, strictly speaking, we pass in that there's no aveira for me'abed asfal adas. Nevertheless, the Chasam Sofer writes in a tshuva that very often the Zman Hazeh we will invoke the Din of Avelus for the following reason, a fascinating line of reasoning. We have a klal in Avelus called Halach Kedivri HaMekel V'Ovel. Whenever you have a Shaila Machlokes Hilchos Avelus, so we tend to go L'Kula Hilchos Avelus. We'll see as we go on, there may be certain exceptions to that rule, but usually when there's Machlokes in Hilchos Avelus, so we tend to go L'Kula. So that's what the Shulchan Aruch writes, as Machlokes the Rambam and the Ramban, is there Avelus from Avedas V'Adas? So the Shulchan Aruch says, Misofek Yinof Yinoeg Avelus, Sofek Avelus L'Kula. So if you write in a tshuva, Sofek Avelus L'Kula, but Sofek Kavod Yisrael is the Chumrah. Namely, if the relatives who are Nebuchadnezzar have to deal with the tragedy itself as such aggravation, so to go ahead and turn around and tell them that there's no Avelus, it's going to be even more agitating for them, it's going to be more embarrassing for them. So Chassam Sofer says that the Rav in each case has to size up and see whether the correct stock maybe should be in the Chumrah, that we should insist that there should be Avelus to in effect protect to some degree the honor of the living relative. And for other reasons, this halacha that there's no Avelus for a suicide is kimat not shayach to Zman Hazeh, because the post can say that in order to be labeled as a suicide, based on a Masechet Smachos, you have to be really, really certain beyond the shadow of a doubt that the person really did commit suicide, something like the equivalent of a suicide note or something like that. But if it's just circumstantial evidence, so we'll try to explain it away, even if it looks like a suicide, but we'll cover it over a little bit, unless it's really crystal clear that it was a suicide. And the post can say, let's say the person was a labar das. Let's say the person was so agitated to the point where they would be labeled as someone who halachically is just not responsible for their actions. That becomes a very, 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 very difficult, call to make. Obviously, anybody who's committed suicide is very agitated. The question is that really a labar das or not? It depends. It's going to be a very, very hard call to say. There are some posts who even say that you can only label someone as an labar das or das in this area if he was given hasra. If you actually warned him before him, like a chayim mitzvah him. Also not going to be too shy. So again, practically speaking, to put in this halacha of ma'abed asfal adas and lamaisa that won't be available, this is usually not going to apply. But in theory, there may be such a klal, at least according to some Rishonim. There's another also a tragic situation where there's no avelus, where that's when a baby dies very, very young. So many of you have learned through the sugya in different places, and it's Shabbos, and it's like a cool little appears, and I think last year, the meal I think we spoke about a little bit, that if a baby dies within the first 30 days of its life, so we suspect that the baby may not really have been a viable birth to begin with. So if it wasn't really destined to live altogether, so we call it halacha a nafel, so for a nafel, textually speaking, there's not going to be any available for. So how do you know whether the baby's a nafel or not? So the Gemara gives us guidelines. The Gemara says that if it doesn't survive the first 30 days, so we assume it may have been a nafel. If it already survived the first 30 days, then we assume it was not a nafel, and then the halacha is it would be regular avelus. Nevertheless, the Gemara tells us, let's say we know for a fact that this baby was a full-term baby. There's no question that it was wasn't able to live. We know it was a full-fledged pregnancy. So the Gemara says, of course, kolo chadasha, so then we assume that the baby is a regular baby, a full, healthy baby, and if something goes wrong afterwards, so that doesn't detract from the avelus. So even if such a baby dies on the first day after it was born, there would be full-fledged avelus if it's kolo chadasha. This is a big question with Zman Hazeh. What's called kolo chadasha? For the Rama, in a different context, not in Hifuz Avelus, but in Hifuz Chalitza, Rama writes that if you know for a fact the mother's in the ninth month already, so you know that's a normal baby, barring anything really, really out of the ordinary. So that's a big shaila with Zman Hazeh. So we usually know, usually the doctors can document the pregnancy pretty much to the almost to the day with Zman Hazeh. So to turn around and say that our babies are not kolo chadashim is a little bit shaky. So what should come out is that Rechman Lutzman, a baby dies in the first 30 days, so this whole halacha shouldn't apply, because our babies are kolo chadashim. that's a shayla. The minhag is not really like that. Usually we assume, like in the olden days, that until the baby lives for 30 days, so I think that's what people know, until the baby lives for 30 days, there's not going to be any avelus. Now at least we have some idea as to who is supposed to be mitabel, in terms of what kind of relative, some people who are exceptions possibly to the rule of avelus. When exactly does avelus begin? At what point does the halachas of avelus begin? So when we speak about the halachas of avelus, again, we'll talk about them hopefully as we go on, the prohibition of washing, and the prohibition of washing clothes, and the prohibition of limud Torah, and she'el shalom, all those isuri avelus. So when exactly do those isurim kick in? So there was a big machlokes that we've shown him, that some Rishonim said that those Yisurim begin already at the time of Nisa. I mean, the person could be like an Onan and Oval at the same time. So as soon as the person dies, the relative dies, so that the unique halachas of Aninus kick in, namely the Isser of Mitzvot and the Isser of Basa V'Yayin, in addition to the unique halachas of Aninus, the Yisurim of Avelus kick in as well. So you mamish can't do anything. You have the worst of both worlds. That's what some Rishonim held. And other Rishonim seem to say no. Other Rishonim seem to say that the Isuri Avelus don't really begin until a much later point. What is a later point? So it's usually assumed that later point is Kavura. Even according to those who say that the Isuri Avelus start from the time of Nisa, they agree that the counting of Shiva doesn't start until the Kavura. Everybody agrees that the Kavura is critical in terms of the Avelus. According to some, that's when the Isuri Avelus begin. According to others, even though the Isuri Avelus may have started beforehand, but the Minyan Avelus, Virus Avelus, doesn't start until much later, until the time of Kavura. We're knowing the Chumra and the Shaila. The Ramah Paskin that some say even the Shulchan Aruch may have agreed to this, but the Ramah says the favorite that the Isuri Avelus begin at the time of Nisan. So basically what that means is, like somewhat of a common misconception, many people think that, well, once the relative, sometimes it happens, the relative dies, and now you call up the Chevra Kedisha, so you know the relatives have really not that much to do for that day, and the Kavura is going to be tomorrow. So they know that the Shiva doesn't start until the Kavura, so they figure, well, I'm not going to get a haircut for a while, so I might as well get a haircut now. I'm not going to be able to shave for a while, I might as well shave now. I might as well take a shower now. Everything that I'm not going to be able to do for a while, I might as well do now. But the Ramah says that that's not right. The Ramah Paskin, that the Isuri Avelus do apply from the time of the Misa. The Shiva doesn't technically start counting until the time of the Kavura, but the Isuri Avelus will begin even at the time of the Misa. I've been using the phrase Kavura, that's the phrase that we're familiar with, that's not the phrase the Gemara uses. The Gemara uses the phrase Stimas HaGolel. The Gemara says that at the time of Stimas HaGolel, when the Shiva really begins, that's according to some, the Isuri Shiva begin, or according to others, when the counting of the Shiva begins, Stimas HaGolel. What exactly is Stimas HaGolel? So those who went to the beginning of the Ketubis may remember this, or the Brachas, if Machlekes appears. The Rashi says Stimas HaGolel means when the Aron is closed. As soon as the coffin is closed, that's already the beginning of the Avelus. Comes an unbelievable Kiddush, according to Rashi. And once the Aron is closed, and the Aron is closed way before the Kavura, as soon as they finish the Torah, they put the Nase inside, they close the Aron, finished. So according to Rashi, the way some Rishonim learn Shan and Rashi, the Ramban learns Shan and Rashi, would come out, that's when the Shiva begins. So Taisa says that's not true. Taisa says that Stimas HaGolel means when you finish the Kavura, when you close up the... Taisa says Golel means like a stone that was put, was kind of lua to Eben up the other air. They would put a stone on top of the Kever. So we put a stone, I must say, much later, but in those days they used to put a stone up at the end of the Kavura. So Taisa says that's what Stimas HaGolel means. That's what we call today Kavura. That's how we assume the Allah. Like Taisa, we pass the Shulchan Aruch, that the Shiva starts at the time of the Kavura, really the Gemar of the Kavura. So this gets a very tricky question of what point exactly is really the Gemar of the Kavura. So sometimes this Shaila, could be a question of a few minutes, can make all the difference in the world. Because we know that in Avelus, it's a Mikvah Yom Kippur, so the day of the Kavura itself counts the first day of Shiva. So sometimes in the wintertime, you can have a Kavura that's going late, and Shkia is, say, 4:30, So you could have many of the Bate Kvaras in New York. You won't have the Shaila. The grave divers, they won't work so late in the afternoon. They won't schedule such a late Kvura. But there are other, by certain Bate Kvaras that are not bound by the union rules, maybe in Yavin or other areas. So you have the Shaila. So you can have very often a Shaila. You'll have a Kvura that's taking place right around Shkia time. So in a sense, you want the Kvura to be over before Shkia, because if you have it over for Shtiyah, then you'll be able to count that day as the first day of Shiva. You'll be able to cut off, in effect, the day of Shiva. this becomes a technical question. Where do you draw the line? Is the Gemara Kvura, is that once you start to put dirt on top of the Aron, once you finish on top of the Aron, once everybody walks away? A detailed question as to what point you consider to be the Stimus Agolo. But the basic Stimus Agolo, which is important for us to know, is that Stimus Agolo is synonymous with the Kvura. So at the time of the Kvura, that's basically when the Chol HaDeis, the Yisuri HaDeis begin. No question about that. At that point, the Yisuri HaDeis begin. And to that point, when the Minyan HaShiva, when the counting of the Shiva, begins from the point of Stimus Agolo. Nevertheless, the Gemara tells us in Maseches Ma'akatan that sometimes you can have a situation where the Shiva begins even before the actual Kvura, and that's if you have individuals who are not going to the Kvura. So this is very common in the days of Chazal, it's common in the also sometimes, in the days of Chazal, so they would bury Mason in Eretz Yisrael, like we went to in Kedusha or not, the real mothers, but the Aron to Eretz Yisrael. So a person would die in Babel, so when they would escort the Aron to Eretz Yisrael, not everybody was able to track, it's a long trip, go from Babel to Eretz Yisrael. So some of the relatives went along, somebody went along, but many of the relatives didn't go along. So at what point do the relatives who are staying behind, at what point do they begin their avelos? So the relatives who are going with the Aron, they're still owning them, they're still owning them, or they're in limbo, but they're not really avelim yet. I mean, the Shiva doesn't start for them because they didn't do the Kvura yet. But what about the relatives who they're not going to the Kvura, they're not shaykhah to the Kvura? So what point does the Shiva begin for them? So the Gemara uses the phrase, Mechima hadritum apaychu, at the time when they turn their heads away, when they turn back from the Shar Ha'ir, so they would escort the mace to the gates of the city, and then when they reached the gates of the city, they would turn around, they would turn back. So at that point, that's called Mahadrisu apaychu, that's considered to be the Tchila Ta'avelu. So what would be the modern day application of that? So the summary would be as follows. Let's say if somebody is lived through New York and they're going to be taken to Eretz Yisrael, so let's say some of the relatives are not going along. So the relatives were staying behind, so somebody usually escorts the mace to the airport, and at some point, where security says, okay, ad kan v'lo yosa, you can't go any further. So the relatives who are not going along on the plane, so they turn around. So at that point, if they turn around, so that's the Tchilas HaShiva for them. That's when the Yisuri HaVeilos, the Chol HaDeis begins, and it's at that point that the counting of Shiva, that would be the first day of Shiva. So even though you have a situation, let's say the Kavura is not going to be for another day or two, so it doesn't matter. They already started to count the first day of Shiva from Hadrichu Apaycha, from Achzoras Aponim, so that's the modern day equivalent of escorting the mace to the Shar Ha'ir that we have today. There were some posts who went to question whether this is really correct, whether this analogy is really right with Manazeh. Some posts can said as follows. So when do we find that Chazal said that the Achzoras Aponim is the halacha equivalent of the Kvura, and that's going to suffice to begin the Avelos? That's only because the relatives who stayed behind in the olden days, they didn't know when the Kvura was going to be. The people who were staying behind in Babel, they didn't have a clue when the Kvura was going to be. So if you don't know when the Kvura is going to be, so the next best thing is Achzoras Aponim. So let's say Bizman Azer, we know, not only do we know exactly when the food is going to be, you know, more often than not, they're listening on the phone. The people in the basic verse and all have a cell phone, and the people in America listening to that stadium, and they know exactly when the Kavura is going to take place. And maybe we should argue that this whole din that appears in the Gemara, the guy with the people from Babel, is a little Hoyas Vamriel in Bizman Azer. The whole thing doesn't apply to Bizman Azer, because Bizman Azer, we have modern day communication. We know exactly when the Kavura is going to take place. So some folks confluence the question, this whole din Bizman Azer, what would that mean? That would mean that the relatives who are staying behind are in limbo. They don't start the Shiva yet, so they're waiting around. And then in a day or two, so then when they get the call that the Kavura was complete, then only then do they begin their count for Shiva also. So Rav Moshe disagreed with this. Rav Moshe held this was not correct. Rav Moshe said that the din of Achzoras Aponim is not because you don't know when the Kavura is, but you do know, you don't know. They're relevant. There's an ayah for this. He assumed, like the other folks, that Achzoras Aponim applies in full force to Zman Hazeh. That's what our minig is. The minig in America, I think today, is like the stock of Rav Moshe. We do invoke the din of Achzoras Aponim to Zman Hazeh, that at the point when the relatives turn back from the airport, so we assume that's considered to be the beginning of the Aveil. That's the equivalent of the Kavura per se. Sometimes you have a situation where it's not going to be a Kavura. Why is there not going to be a Kavura? So as we mentioned before, that the body is lost. The body is lost to fear, or the body is lost to the building collapse, whatever it is. They don't have the body right now. So when does the shiva begin? In the case of the Maharam, so at what point did the relatives begin shiva? He said that kol zman, that there's no body, there's no people, there's no tzarich food to be metaper with. So everybody agrees that there's not going to be aninus at that point. So just because there's no aninus doesn't necessarily mean that the shiva begins. It could be that the people are in limbo. So at what point do you say that the shiva actually begins? So the Rishonim say it's based on at the point when the relatives give up any hope of ever getting the body back. So Misyashim Lekovro. Once the relatives are Misyash, once they give up hope, they despair, they're not going to find the body. So once they reach that realization that they're not going to find the body anymore, so then and only then does the shiva begin. At that point, that's like the halakha equivalent of the kvur, the yashim, the kavro. The only possible exception of this is that doesn't appear in the Gemara, this particular halakha, it appears in the Onim and the Rishonim have this idea that this halakha could become a little bit tricky. That means to invoke an avelus without a body here would be very tricky, because if there's no body here, you have to always be worried maybe the person isn't really dead. So what are the ramifications of observing shiva? The person's not dead? All right, you sat on the floor for a week, right? So you didn't learn for a week, you didn't take a shower for a week. I think all the relatives would be more than happy if the person comes back. But there is a potential disaster that can happen by being knowing shiva on a person who's not dead. Namely, what if the person who we're observing shiva for is a married man? So if we're going to be observed shiva because we think this person is dead, and we think that his body is lost, and we can't find it in the rubble, we can't find it out at sea, so we're going to assume, well, he's probably dead, and Nishashim Lekavro, and we're going to observe shiva. But that could be very, very terrible. Why? Because if we're going to observe shiva for a married man, so everyone's going to realize that must mean that he must be dead. And what that's going to mean is that his wife may remarry based on the fact that we're telling them to observe shiva, and that may not necessarily be true, because there are two prophets in the seven Yevamos, and there's two prophets in Yevamos, which talk about all the unfortunate, gory details as to what's necessary to really halakhically identify that a person is really dead. There's a whole sugya in the Gemara about if a person is lost at sea, and a person is other events that happen. At what point does the Beis Din say that we are deciding up Din that the person is really not here, even without actual evidence of a body itself? Those are very, very complicated, very very tragic sugyas. So those sugyas play a role now in Hilchos Avelus. We've shown to develop a klal that we're not going to let you observe Avelus unless we are certain the person is dead. It shouldn't lead to a mikshol in the realm of Eish Zish. So that's the minute. It's not a din in the Gemara. The Gemara doesn't make this equation. The Rishonim made up this equation to prevent any mikshal, any stumbling block, chalila happening, of the married woman remarrying before it's really been ascertained properly that the husband is really dead. So some poskim who said that this minute applies even if the man's not married, and applies even if it's a woman who died, it's a low plug. I mean, so as long as we don't have absolute perfect evidence that convinced us beyond the shadow of a doubt the person's dead, evidence enough that we would accept to be master a woman to get married, we will not let you observe Avelus. And others say no, that the minig only existed if the mace is a married man, when there's real fear of a mikshel. If it's a woman, it's a single guy, so what's there to be afraid of? So you observe it. If you think he's dead, if it appears to us that he's dead, it appears that the body's missing, it appears that it's Yashin Makavro, so we're going to let you observe Avelus. This is a different poskim, have different opinions about this. But at least for a married woman, everybody agrees we should follow this minig that we don't observe Avelus until we're really convinced, for Hilchos Agunah's purposes, that the person is actually dead. Fortunately, anyone who knows the shilas that came up after September 11th, so many of them were revolved around these issues. Fortunately, there were many married men who were missing. And in absence of a body, it becomes very, very tricky as to what halach is. There are complicated sugyas in the Gemara about if a person was in a furnace, or a person was in a lion's den, a person was in the ocean, different complicated sugyas. At what point do we make the statement that the person is really is no longer alive? So that is important both in terms of being master the Eish Zish to remarry, and it's also going to spill over. The Avelus, according to what we follow, that we're not going to be knowing Avelus, calls mind that we're not really convinced that the person is actually dead. Before we speak about the Surim of Avelus per se, in terms of what the Avel can do and can't do in Hilchos Avelus, just a little bit about the Minyan Avelus, in the sense of the counting of the 7 days of Avelus, of the basic days of Shiva. So the fact that Yishalmi tells us that there's a source in the Chumash itself for the notion of 7 days of Avelut, the Potsi and Pashas Baichi, the Yosla of his Evel Shivat Yamin. So the Yishalmi seems to say that Avelut is a deraisa based on that. Others disagree, others say, that's Machta Bialma, it's called the Matan Teira, you can't learn after the full Matan Teira. Shivat in Avelut is only a Tachanat Tachaman. The way of the Lashon that Moshe Tikal Hamli is still Shivat in Avelut. So it's probably only in the Rabbanan, there may be certain aspects of Avelut of deraisa. But the notion of Shiva, the idea of sitting Shiva, the Shiva in the Avelut, that was most probably only Midr Rabbanon. But it's important to figure out, Cheshbon out, how exactly you count out this, these 7 days. So we said we know when the Avelut begins. It starts from either the time of the Kavur under normal circumstances, but in an abnormal circumstances, it could start from halakha equivalent of Kavur, either halakha equivalent of Hatzaras Panim that we mentioned, going back from the airport, or the halakha equivalent of Mityashim of the Kavro, in the case of the missing body. So, but once we know that the Avelut begins, so then it's fairly simple. It seems to be fairly straightforward. Just count off 7 days, and then the Avelut is over. So not so simple. So sometimes you can have a strange situation, which is fairly common, Shiloh B'Zman Hazeh, where you can have different relatives having different counts. Very mundane thing, a very strange thing. That different relatives could be up to, in a sense, different days of Shiva. Happen that days, different relatives up to different days of Shiva. So the Gemara describes as follows. Let's say you have, the olden days, communication was very, very schwach. So you had a few people, some of the members of the family lived in one town, and somebody else lived in another town. So all the people lived in this particular town, so they were there when the relative passed away, they were there at the Kavura, so they started counting Shiva. So they're up to already the fifth day of Shiva. All of a sudden, somebody else comes in, another relative comes in, our brother, or whatever it is, our son, whoever it is, comes in, and he comes into town, and they tell him, Chaval, terrible news, that you just lost your relative, and all your other relatives in the middle of sitting Shiva. So the question is, so where does this guy fit into the picture now? Obviously, he has to start the Noyik Shiva right now, but what's his count of Shiva? Is he up to day one? So to him, he just found out. Or do you say no? He becomes bumped out to the other relatives. He's up to day five. So whatever they hear up to, he's up to also. Where does the Shiva fit in under these types of circumstances? So the Gemara tells us that sometimes the halacha says that the new relative who comes becomes botel to the previous relative, becomes part of their count, which is really a sense of kula, because rather than having him start from scratch, having him start from one, he could pick up along with them and only have 2-3 days of Shiva. So what conditions are necessary in order for him to become botel to their Avelut? So the Gemara says that number one, he has to come while they're still in the middle of Avelut. If he comes when the Shiva's over, so then you can't say, well, since he found them on day 14 of Shloshim, so he could start day 14 of Shloshim. That's not true. They have to still be in the middle of Shiva. What's considered to be the middle of Shiva? So Machlek is Atanam, we pass in until the morning of the seventh day. Once the Avelim get up already on the seventh day, we'll talk about that a little bit later, about getting up early. Once the Avelim get up, then the Shiva's over. And even if he comes in the afternoon of the seventh day, that's too late. But if he comes in the sixth day, or even in the very, very early morning of the seventh day, so he's still considered to be bottled to the other relatives. He can in effect shave off a few days of Shiva. Number two, the Gemara says he has to be within a Makam Karav. It has to be that he came from fairly close by. If he came from very, very far away, so that doesn't apply. That's a big shayla b'zman hazeh. What's that called? What's called Makam Karav? Because the Rishonim describe Makam Karav as being the amount of time it takes a person to travel in one day, walking, driving, flying, everything changes, the whole geography, we live in a different kind of a world, Bizman Hazeh. Then the Rishonim say that the halacha only, the Gemara says this halacha only applies if there's a gadol habayis, if there's somebody who is clearly running the show, the person who's really in charge, making the decisions, the financial decisions, other decisions for the family now. So if the Gadol Habayis started the Shiva early, so then if the newcomer is not a Gadol Habayis, he's a couple of Habayis, so then and only then he becomes vulnerable to the original relative. Those three conditions have to be met. It has to be that they're still in the middle of observing Shiva. And number two, it has to be Babi Makam Karov. And number three, it has to be the situation of Gadol Habayis. So each one of those conditions are sometimes a little bit shaky. The Zman Hazeh, this particular aspect of the Shaila, is Kim'at Nachai. Just about never happens because of modern communication. This case talking about is the guy didn't know. He had no clue that his relative died, and he finds out, he arrives in town, and he realizes that his relative died, and the other relative is up to the fifth day of Shiva. It's not Shaykh, that should happen with Zman Hazeh. What the much more common scenario with Zman Hazeh is the second half of the sugya. Those who learned the sugya in Ma'akot, and this is the hardest sugya, I think, in Hilchos Avelos. It's called the sugya of Halach Vel Havayis Abeis HaKvara. It's a long sugya with five pshatim in the Rishonim. It's a long, long, long shach in Yeridea. I'll try to give kitzur nimrus what plays out Halach Lamayis for us this man hazeh. So the Gemara and the Rishon discuss the second half of the Shaila as follows. Let's say, not that the new relative comes and he has no idea what was going on and he finds out now that his relative died. No. He knew his relative died. He was there together, Bishas Mitzah. Everybody was there together. And now he went along to the Beit HaKavaros and everybody else stayed behind. So what happens? If you go with the halachas that we spoke about before, that if you go to the Beit HaKavaros, so Shiva starts at the time of Chvura. If you don't go to the basic Kavara, so Shiva starts at the time of Achzaras Panim. See, now you have a muddy situation, a strange situation. You have different relatives and different counts. So what happens? So one group of relatives, the relatives that went off to Eretz Yisrael, so they're going to start their Shiva on Tuesday. Whereas the relatives that stayed behind, they're going to start their Shiva on Sunday. How are you talking about that? So one group of relatives observing Shiva starting from Sunday, another group starting from Tuesday, sounds very, very bizarre. Well, it depends. If the relatives who went to Eretz Yisrael to the Gevurah Taka stay in Eretz Yisrael and they don't come back, so yeah, that's a bit. So they started from Tuesday from the Gevurah. The first group started from Sunday from the Achzaras Panim. And sure, that's it. They have two different counts. They'll end on Monday, they'll end on Shabbos. It's not a problem. But what's the din? If the relatives who went along to Eretz Yisrael, they come back, and now they come back in the middle of Shiva, and they find their other relative had already started Shiva. They already started Shiva. There was no chiddush that they knew they started Shiva. They left, they started Shiva as soon as they were machs upon him from the airplane. So now what's the halacha? So at least according to the Pesach of the Shach paskens that under this circumstance, again, the classic scenario of Bizman Hazeh, so you have a person dies, and you have a levaya in New York on Sunday, and Sunday afternoon, they take the mace to the airport, and the flight leaves Sunday afternoon, and the relatives will stay behind, start Shiva Sunday afternoon. That's the first day of Shiva, so for them, there's no question the Shiva will be over on Shabbos, that'll be the last day of Shiva. The relatives will go along to Eretz Yisrael, the Kavur is not going to be till Monday afternoon, so for them, they start Shiva on Monday, but now they come back to America on Tuesday, so they're back Wednesday, morning, so what day are they up to? Do they follow their count of Shiva, or do they now become batel to the relatives who got the head start on them? So the Shach paskins that in that circumstances, when they were all together at the Misa, and they all basically started together, and now each one went to their own count, if they all get back together again, then you follow the earlier count. That was the Pesach of the Shach, and everyone picks up the count of the earlier relatives, and the relatives who went there to Israel, in effect, shaved off the day of Shiva. If they lost a day or two, whatever it was, they lost a day or two of Shiva. They become batel to the original relatives who stayed behind. That was the Pesach of the Shach. That's a many poskim hold. Not everybody holds this way. Machlokes the Mechaber and the Ramah and others. The Moshe didn't pass in this way. So there are some who say that the relatives who come back have to keep the extra day of Shiva. So they're different in Hagim Adayim and there. In Klai Yisrael, you may have seen this in the, sometimes in Menachem Avil, you may have seen like signs in the door or something that says that plenty and plenty will be sitting Shiva until Tuesday, and plenty will be sitting Shiva until Wednesday. So, Chayit Rachim. So that kind of a sign is the Pesach of Ramosha. If you hold like the Shach, that would never make any sense to kind of that, to have such a scenario. But that type of a scenario, you have an extra person chapper around the extra day, but that's those people who are not accepting the Shach and Allah. For those who follow the Shach, they would always end up with the uniform Shiva basically at the end, unless the relatives didn't return. If they don't return, then they say, according to the Eretz Yisrael Cheshbon, and the Americans say, according to the American Cheshbon. Shiva ends at the last day of Shiva. There was a chagas at Tanoim in my Kotzen, and there's a parak about whether you need the last full day of Shiva in order for Shiva to end, or whether Shiva ends, do we apply the principle, whether we apply the principle of Mikzas Hayom Tekulo. And even the part of the seventh day is already considered to be enough for the Shiva to be concluded. We pass in Allah the Kula, Allah Kadir make of the Aval. This is one of the cases where the Gemara says explicitly that Allah Kadir make of the Aval, that we're lenient in this Machlokes. We pass in that the Shiva ends at the beginning of the seventh day, Mikta Sayyom Kikula. What exactly does Mikta Sayyom Kikula mean? When exactly does that apply? There was a big Machlokes that we shown him about whether Mikta Sayyom Kikula applies on the morning of the seventh day, or whether Mikta Sayyom Kikula applies on the night before. So this is a shayla, this is a lamda shayla. It's really more of a nida sugya than a vela sugya. That's what the sugya originally appears in the Kulo. But the bottom line is, Hinuchas Avela says, my point is to Rishonim, Ba'an and others, about whether Mitzvah Kul applies at night or applies in the morning. In Shulchan Aruch, we paskin that it applies in the morning. So Avela on the seventh night have to wait until the following morning before they complete their Avela. Nevertheless, if it's a Tshuva quote from the Radvaz, it says that since it's a Machlokes, and even though the minig has become to be Chumra like the Shulchan Aruch, sometimes if observing those extra night of Avela is going to interfere with Tzorchei Mitzvah, so then we would tell the Avela not to be Noeg Avelas at night. Rely on the Mekilim, rely on the Ramban, those who show them to say, Mitzvah Gula applies at night. What would that mean practically? The guy wants to learn. The guy's already 6 days behind the Yermi. They want the Chab to learn already. Or let's say the Mokham Ona hasn't been in his life ready for a week. So those kinds of circumstances, one would be able to commit even the night of the seventh. That's the Kachuba Klo. So I think that the minhag today is not that way, and I think the reason is, I think the minhag is correct not to rely on the skula, based on the following. The Ramban has a comment in Teresa Adam. Ramban writes that if you look at the Gemara says, at what point precisely does the Avelis really begin? So the Gemara says, Mitzvah Yom Kippur, and the Gemara says, by the time of Amidas HaMenachemim, when the people who are coming to the Menachem Ovel, when they get up, when they stand up, when they leave, so at that point, we say, Mitzvah Yom Kippur. My high, what do you mean Amidas HaMenachemim? For blood in the sink, the Ramban writes, technically you should really say Mitzvah Yom Kippur, either it's being of the night, being of the day, whatever it is, but it's going to be a very, very strange situation that the Ovel got up, he already put his chair, shiva chair away, he's already put his shoes on, he's already in the shower, and someone's going to come and be Menachem Ovel. You'll be knocking on the door, be Menachem Ovel. The Zion, the Chukuk Luba, and therefore the Ramban says, the Chachamim Mastakin, that until the last Menachem comes, and he's always someone who doesn't know the right day, he comes the next day also. But I'm saying until the Menachem, whatever the state of the normal Menachem is, so even though it's technically Mitzvah Yom Kippur, you shouldn't rely on Mitzvah Yom Kippur until it meets the Menachem. That's why I think with Mana Zeh, we have Menachem who comes the seventh day in the morning. Okay? As a minion in his house in the seventh morning, so the Menachem is going to come the next morning. So how about we let him the night before? So what's going to happen? 10 o'clock at night, everyone goes home. At 10 o'clock, he's going to go sit and learn Daf Yomi. How could that be? How can you let the guy violate the dinim of Shiva, and then turn around and let him accept the condolences the next morning? It's a sphira. So since our minig is to continue the nicham until the following morning, I think that cool of the Radvaz falls by the way, but I think that the other is not knowing that way. I think that we assume that until the seventh morning, until Amidas HaMenachem, so be it. There are more quotes that what if you have a situation where there are no Menachem on the seventh day? There are more rights than in his town in Krakow in Poland, so the Menachem didn't come on the seventh day. So what do you do? So what do you wait for? If there's no Amidas HaMenachem, what do you wait for? So the Ramah writes, you have to chesh b'nah. How long would a Amidas HaMenachem take? How long would it normally take on a regular day? So the Ramah writes that when do the people come to the Menachem Ovel? Usually the minyan, right after the minyan. So the Ramah says, it takes a little bit of time. So from Neitz Chacham until, I don't know, half hour. It's the first Adavin in your town. So half hour, 45 minutes, 50 minutes, an hour, whatever it is. That's the Zman of Amidas HaMenachem. The Ramah says that the Olam Zach, the Olam says that you have to wait an hour on the seventh day. You have to observe an hour of Shiva on the seventh day. So the Ramah says it's not. It's not 60 minutes, an hour. An hour is just the time that usually approximates how long it takes people to finish davening. But if it takes less, there is no din of waiting a full hour. Again, the zman hazeh, it's usually not shayach, because if there's a minyan in the Shiva house, there usually will be a minyan on the seventh day also. So after the minyan is over, the menachem will sit down and give a short nichum avail. At that point, when they finish the nichum, that's when the Shiva is over. If, let's say, there's no minyan in the Shiva house, so only a woman is sitting Shiva, there is no minyan in the Shiva house for whatever reason, so then one should follow what the Ramah says, that after a certain amount of time, you make the cheshbon, how long minyan in town takes. But a few minutes after that, that's when the Shiva is over. And then again, not to end the avail the night before. That idea that, at least according to some Rishonim, the Avelis really ends the night before, Mitzvah Yom Kippur flies the night before, this is the source for the machlokes that take place in a different type of Avelis, like the Avelis of Sfirah Omer. We know we have many minhagim of Avelis or in Sfirah, which have their roots, and the Gaonim have this practice. Gemara in Yivam tells the story about the Talmidei Rabbi Akiva, but the Gemara doesn't relate this to any practice of Avelis per se. The Gemara doesn't tell us what we're supposed to do about the fact that the Talmidei Rabbi Akiva died. So the Gaonim write that's because of this, but the minhag developed after they get married, after the haircuts, the minhagim of Sfirah that we're familiar with. So the post came out, whole discussion about when exactly the Avelos of Sphere end. So those who end the Sphere on Hag BaOmer, so at what point do we say that we say Mikvah Siyom Hukulo? So the Ramah writes that the Minhag Ashkenazim is to permit all weddings and haircuts already on the 33rd day. You don't have to wait 33 full days. Mikvah Siyom Hukulo. So there was a further Mechlegis. Does that mean the night before? Does that mean even the morning of Hag BaOmer? So that's a Shaila. There are different Minhagim about that. The Ramah writes the Metshuva that. I don't know whether the original tshuva was only written after the fact. They had already booked the place, even the chachil. I don't know the details of that particular case. But under certain circumstances, well, we make a sphere of spheres on the minig anyway. It's not a real din, so maybe certain limited circumstances we can rely on the mekilim even the night before. But a normal protocol, the Ramah writes, once you really wait to get a haircut until the day of Lag BaOmer. This year it was a very tricky situation. Lag BaOmer was on a Friday. So basically, that was the end. You couldn't have weddings. No one's getting married on Friday. So there was a big push to have weddings on Thursday night, so to rely on that kula. So there was some relying on that kula of having weddings that night. So I guess we'll take this line. First, is required to keep talakha to shiva. What's talakha if a person doesn't? The person didn't observe what they were supposed to do during shiva. So now they feel bad about it, so now they want to know, is there a tashlumin for shiva? I didn't keep the veil, it's supposed to keep it afterwards. So the Rishonim quote the following compromise, based on a ravid, that it depends. But if the person, mamash, didn't keep any shiva at all, mamash, nothing, he didn't keep any of the isur of shiva, he didn't keep any of the days of shiva, mamash was a total free-for-all. So then, Taki really supposed to be mashlim afterwards. You should observe the shiva at the point. So to shloshim, it should take off 7 days and really observe shiva. So the person kept the quasi shiva. He kept a few days. He was he went to work a couple of days. He shouldn't have, or he didn't keep all the lachs of shiva. He kept a quasi, a little bit of shiva. As long as he did a chacham mitzas and niyug of shiva, so then the lach is that he doesn't have to have any tashlumin. So to be evident, as long as there was some degree of shiva that was observed, it's okay. But if there was no shiva at all, neither in days nor in nihugim and nothing, then the lach is that a person would be required to be mashed in the shiva afterwards. Folks can have a big machlokes. What if you have the following situation, that a person didn't observe shiva because they couldn't observe shiva, not because they were careless, but they were sick, but they were in such a situation where it wasn't checked. They knew that their relative died, but they couldn't observe. They were in the hospital, they couldn't really observe shiva. So what's the halacha? Do they have to, when they get better, are they required to be mashtim to observe a shiva later or not? So some folks said, yeah. Some folks said that if you didn't observe any shiva whatsoever, so you have to observe shiva at some point before shloshim is over. And other folks are going to make, for a variety of reasons, some folks can make one say that when a person is sick, laying in a hospital, so they did observe technically some of the shiva. They weren't wearing shoes, they weren't washing themselves, they weren't doing work. So they, by default, they observed some of the halachas of shiva. And others say, that's not really observing that lach of shiva. They don't wear shoes because there's no one wearing shoes. That's not really observing the shiva. But others give a different spar why. Others say, why is it that the Ravid says that if you miss shiva, you have to make it up? So the Ravid says, shelo yechete niska. If it's following the halacha, that if a person doesn't have favor, we don't want to reward you for doing something that's wrong. So the Ravid says, if a guy doesn't observe all of shiva, so we're going to say, nah, no problem, so you don't have to observe shiva. Chayte niskar, so as a knas, a penalty, if he wants to do tshuva, if he doesn't want to do tshuva, he's not going to lose us, but if he wants to do tshuva, and he wants to observe shiva at a later point, then we will tell him to observe shiva at a later point, as a knas, so to speak, as a penalty for what he did that was wrong. But let's say a long-lost person was stuck in the hospital, they couldn't observe shiva because they were not shy to observe shiva, it wasn't their fault. So then that whole Chumrah the Ravid doesn't apply. So the Shiva's over, it's over, finished. So this unfortunately sometimes these are very, very tragic shiles that have to sometimes be paskin. You have like an accident or something, or where some of the members of the family are killed and others are not, but the others who survive also aren't in such good shape. So sometimes they're going to be in the hospital, they're going to be not shy to observe a proper Shiva. So what's that look? So I think that Pasha is like these later folks from the story that person wasn't at fault, obviously, they're not keeping shiva. So whatever they do in the hospital, they do. And if they want to keep shiva, if there's something else, in terms of being required to observe a shiva, so pashup shot is that they really wouldn't do it. Okay, we'll take just a couple of minute break now, and hopefully, about 5 minutes or so, we'll continue.
I was asking before, I'm saying, is this to say all these cases that we have before, is that to say we possibly against the rush? Like, the cases with the, for instance, if it's impossible to care for that man or a different city, the rush would say anybody's a relative right away comes to own it.
That's the style of the rush. Maybe the rush may also agree. If it's totally, it's a different breed of a guy. Could do it, but he's not doing it. Okay, moms can't do it.
And what about there's a mamish rule for asking that Sefer Kedisha is mamish the same as?
Well, yeah, I get it.
Don't talk about it. I know if you come and ask Sefer Kedisha.
What?
Why? I'm gonna get that.
Oh yeah.
All right.
Yeah. No.
If the parent would want you to, so something else. But usually the parent doesn't want you.
What?
I mean, if the parent would want you to observe Shiva, but if the parent doesn't want it, so you're not able to.